I originally declined being here tonight. But since there's a halacha that you don't say no to big people, so Rebecca Kowski was adamant, so I'm here. In his honor, the honor of the Israel Center. However, I very strongly feel, especially here in Eretz Israel, everybody has to find their own personal rav who gets to know them, who they get to know, and who knows their specific situation, what their customs are, whatever, and those are the people you should ask questions from, and not people like me who don't know you, who come here just like this, and maybe not as qualified even as some of the people you could find to ask questions. However, since there are people who are here, you know, not so long, or live in communities where they don't find a rav that they speak the same language of, so Rabbi Krakowski convinced me that there may be some purpose of me being here. But I would like to make whatever I say just advice, not a psak, and you are welcome to ask a personal rav after that if you want to get a psak halacha. Okay, I don't know if that goes for Rabbi Krakowski, he's the more das over here, so that may not apply, but it applies to me.
Well, now we have the best of both worlds. All right, anyone want to start it off with a question?
You don't have to be uncomfortable to be the first one.
I will. It's my understanding that we conjure things according to how the chametz is absorbed in them. Correct?
Yeah, for the most part. So there's always exceptions to the rule, but that's the rule.
Okay, why is it necessary to boil the Kiddush cup that's never had anything warm in it?
How do you kosher a Kiddush cup?
Okay, how do you kosher? Thank you.
You're right. That really, from all halachic standpoint, it should be enough just to wash out a Kiddush cup. However, however, sometimes you wash the Kiddush cup in hot water with chametz, things, or whatever. So there is some idea, possibility of the Kiddush cup having absorbed chametz with hot, even though that's not so probable either. And therefore, the custom is that things that are brought to the table that we make hagola on them, even though strictly speaking it may not be necessary, but that's the minute. And the reason is because since the rabbis were very, very strict with chametz, more than about any other prohibition, so they became minhagim to be extra strict, even in those areas where the halacha may permit it, but the minute became to be extra strict, so this way across the board, you don't come to do something that's not proper with chametz.
Thank you. So you
can kosher. You can kosher, yes, you can. But the minig is not just to wash it out, but to kosher it with boiling water.
I have a question. So it seems to me that they say you can kosher wood. So I mean, obviously, you know, that's been around a long time, but a lot. But it's on an anatomic level, it seems like impossible. I mean, it seems like wood is such an absorptive substance, right? I suppose, I mean, boiling a wooden vessel of some sort, right? Compared to so many other types of vessels that you wouldn't kosher, because let's say, you know, like wood compared to ceramic. I mean, wood is so much more absorptive than ceramic. It's unbelievable.
Okay, I'm not a professor who knows more about it than I
do. The truth is that we generally do not kasher wood. Theoretically, the reason why wood in many situations might be kasherable, and even though it seemingly is more absorbent, I just had this conversation with somebody today with two totally different substances. The OU's position, when it comes to Shayish Kesari, to Caesar marble, they call here, that's very common here in Eretz Yisrael, it's becoming more common in America as well, which is a synthetic marble, if you will. It's made from 90% quartz crystal mixed with glue and various dyes. We view it as porous and say that it's not kasherable. So I told somebody that if you look at it though, you take, if anybody who has a real marble counter, not a dark granite, but let's say Shayish Chevroni or something like that, which is a light color marble, you'll see that it's very absorbent. It absorbs, if you leave an oil jug out there for a few weeks, you'll see very quickly it will start to have an oil stain that will be very difficult for you to take out of the counter afterwards. With using bleach and degreasers and whatever it is, it's still going to be very difficult to remove. Whereas on Caesar marble, you'll see that it almost doesn't absorb anything. It seems to be very, very strong and not absorbent. Sometimes, something which is more absorbent is also going to release what it absorbed more easily also. It will allow the hot water to go through it and to make the counter act of it spitting back out, so to speak, whatever was absorbed within. So it's not always true that we're going to say something which seems to be more absorbent can't be kosher, and something which is less absorbent can be kosher. Glass is something where there are those opinions that hold that because it's not absorbent at all, it doesn't need to be kosher. By Pesach, the Ashkenazim are always machmir when it comes to glass. But that's the difference. Once something is absorbent, it's not so much a question if it is or isn't anymore, but rather a question of if it's possible to somehow remove what it absorbed.
But not to harp on the point too much, right? But on the level of if something is very absorbent, right? Then it seemed to me that if it absorbed the substance and you really wanted to purge that object, you'd need some sort of a vacuum chamber to really do it effectively, not just hot water.
So again, permit me to borrow from another sugya in halacha, which is, very often, we buy kosher meat. And you let the kosher meat sit on your counter as it's defrosting, and you see that there's this red juice that you say, it's blood. And it's coming out of it, but we can't eat blood. And we kasher the blood. So there's a certain amount that Chazal deemed al pi v'Torah to be what's considered that which is aser. And a certain amount that for whatever reason, if you can't take it out, so it's not going to get back into your food, or whatever it is. So there's a certain point in time where Chazal made a shear, they assessed that this is the amount that we're worried about. Beyond that, we're not worried about if you couldn't remove it by boiling it, so it's not going to be removed either when you put something hot back into the pot. It's not always something that goes tit for tat just because you think it's going to be more this way or more that way. It has to do with things that sometimes there are sugyas and shas to discuss exactly why, sugyas in the poskim, there's machloks in between the various poskim. Depending on the exact scenario. But that's really, it's very hard to just come and say, you know, it seems more absorbent, it seems less absorbent, it seems that you have to need something even stronger than that. No, it just needs to be the extent that removes that the issur that might end up back into your food on Pesach.
Well, glad I came.
How do you kosher oven? I know
that
it's self-cleaning and it should do the job, but you
still have to wash it out. How do you do that? A self-cleaning oven achieves what's called libun kal. And for chametz, that's enough. In other words, you don't need a blowtorch. You'd have to blowtorch it. You'd have to get it till it's red hot, or at least till if you hit it, sparks would fly. That does not necessarily for chametz, because chametz, when it was absorbed, wasn't prohibited. It was absorbed in a time that was permitted. So usually the temperature that a self-cleaning oven reaches is libun kal. However, the pressure of gas, right, affects how high the temperature is going to be on the clean cycle. And therefore, sometimes here in Eretz Yisrael, where you have gas balloons and you don't have a gas supply from, like in America, from the gas company, per se, the pressure is not as great, and therefore sometimes to achieve that heat, you have to do it twice. You have to see, if you have to do it the first time, if all there is the ashes, the dust, and it appears to have been a good cycle, then once is enough. You see, if it's not 100%, then usually the second time around will achieve what the first time didn't achieve. The most self-cleaning ovens have a guard that separates between the glass of the door and the oven. So when it's not on self-clean, the glass is exposed, and when it is, the glass is covered, so then the glass doesn't become kosher. So it's a good idea that if that is the case, to cover the glass part of the inside of the oven, and the racks and whatever leave inside, and those are kosher also.
What should I cover the glass part with?
With aluminum foil or whatever, with some heat-proof tape or whatever. But you should check and see, sometimes the glass itself is exposed to the heat, and then it shouldn't be a problem.
When you see a product that has two hashgachot, what does that mean?
Two hashgachot,
a badatz and an OU, for example.
Okay. There are different reasons why a product might have two hashgachos. Very often, the hashgachos work together. And it's the company will desire the two hashgachos for marketing purposes. Sometimes there might be one hashgacha that is for Pesach, another hashgacha that's not for Pesach. And then it can be a difference between minhagim, it can be a difference between precise standards as to why the product has one hashgacha for Pesach, and the other shkacha is only for year-round use. In a situation where one shkacha is for year-round use and one shkacha is for Pesach, it's very often important to try to understand the reason why certain shkachos will certify the product for Pesach, while others won't. If it's a Sephardi shkacha, if it's Bedatz Beit Yosef or Rav Machfud, something to that effect, it's very likely, due to the fact that there might be kitnios in the product. So Ashkenazi Jewry wouldn't eat the product for Pesach. Theoretically, there's nothing that's chametz in the product, and even the Datsay, the Charedis, or whatever it will be that would be on it, doesn't have a problem with the product not being kosher for Pesach, but they can't give Ashkacha for it because in their communities, people wouldn't eat such an item with kitnios. However, what we very frequently get questions here in the OU is products that have an OUP on it, and the badatz is only for year-round use. Now, I'm going to say most of the time, again, if you have any specific questions about a specific product or something where you have a question about what the OU is makbid on in such a scenario, always feel free to ask us. But very often, all the ingredients that go into the product, the badatz have badatz eda charedis on it for Pesach. The difference is that the eda charedis had, until recently at least, had an agenda as follows. Anything that had more than five ingredients that were used to make for the makeup of the product, they said it's already more complicated. It means two things. First of all, there's a lot for us to already be mashkiachan, to be mefakeachan, to oversee, aleph. And bet is, it's already a more complicated product, it's probably not a necessity. And since it's not a necessity, why should we take the responsibility of such a chamor yomtov on our shoulders? Whereas the OU, because we're a community kashrus, the way we viewed it was, it has always been different, and we say we have to provide our community with whatever products we possibly can. Therefore, if all the ingredients are okay for Pesach on a higher standard, we have no problem certifying the product for Pesach. But there's always going to be areas that different kashriyot will disagree upon, and those are things that are worthwhile checking out with the hashgacha that certifies it for Pesach to verify if you have a chash, if you suspect that maybe there's some sort of kula being used that you wouldn't want to use yourself.
What's the current status of quinoa for Pesach?
The quinoa, what I tell my people and my kehila is the following. And that's not sad for you, you're welcome to. The quinoa. I said quinoa and somebody told me it was quinoa, so now it's quinoa. Whatever it is, you get the idea, right? There are reliable hashgachas, a star K, I know for sure, holds that quinoa is not kidneys. Vegetable, it's not a bean, it's not a legume, whatever. There's a problem with it even according to the star K, and that is that the processing and where it grows are very much exposed to real chametz, and therefore even they say that you can't just get regular quinoa and use it for Pesach. It has to have hashgacha for Pesach that supervise the processing. There are other poskim, especially poskim here in Eretz Yisrael, who hold that the quinoa is kidneys. Therefore, what I tell the people of my kehillah is the following. If you don't need it for medical reasons doesn't mean that you're sick and you need quinoa as a drug. It means the following. You're on a diet and there is very little you can eat. Now, if you don't use this, and they use it during the year also as a staple in their diet for health reasons, then there are heterim to use kidneys for health reasons, even though that not necessarily would be mamish as a medicine, right? But it's enough of a reason to rely on those that say that it's not kidneys. If you don't need it for those reasons, right, then better to use something else. The same thing goes for artificial sweeteners like aspartame and some sorbates. Some opinions say that they're kidneys, some say that they aren't kidneys. If somebody needs diet sodas, then use those specific kinds of sweeteners because of their, for a health reason for their diet, then I permit people to use it on Pesach. If it's not for health reasons, then find something else to drink. I think the OU here in Eretz Yisrael, if I'm right, does not use these kinds of sweeteners or kidneys shemishtanu, which means the kidneys that have changed radically from their original state. Most of the poskim here in Eretz Yisrael hold that they're usher. There are some who hold that it's okay. And thing that used to be that the OU in America used kidney shinishtanu, and the OU here does not use it. That's what I got the impression. So again, you should ask your personal rav, because it's a legitimate machlokes. There are those that legitimately say it's okay, those that legitimately say it's not okay. And but for my kehila, I tell them if they need it for health reasons, they can use it. Not for health reasons, they shouldn't.
Just add briefly, not on my behalf, but in terms of the OU's policies and some of the things that the Rav mentioned. So, quinoa, the OU doesn't have a policy because it's a machlokis between the OU poskim, between Meir Rabbi or Belsky Shlita, and between the Shechter. So the OU will not certify it because it's a machlokes between the poskim. Rabelski maintains that it has all the tnaim, all the conditions of kidneys. So even though it wasn't around when Chazal, when at least the Ashkenazic rabbis made the enactment against kidneys, forbidding kidneys, prohibiting kidneys over Pesach, since it has all the nuances, all the everything that kidneys need to have to be considered kidneys, he maintains that it's kidneys, even though his Rebbe, Rav Moshe Feinstein, said that we don't add on new kidneys. So that's what Rav Moshe was talking about in situations where it's not so clear that it's a kitnios, maybe something like a peanut, which is a question also in certain kibbutz in America that are mekel, which the OU is not mekel on, and most of the ashkachos aren't mekel on. But nonetheless, that might be something which is a question. It wasn't around then, and it's really more of a bean. You don't, nobody grinds it up and makes a bread out of it. It doesn't grow together with grains, etc. So it has very little things in common, other than that it's some sort of legume, bean-like food item that's frequently consumed. So quinoa, Rebelski maintains, looks like a grain. Theoretically, it can be ground and it can make breads out of it, theoretically, even though it's not the usual use. And it grows together with grains and is processed together with grains very often, and therefore he feels that it should be viewed as kidneys. Rabbi Shafi maintains that Rav Moshe seems to be very clear that we don't add on anything new to the takana, to the gzera of kidneys in the Ashkenazi community, and therefore, if Lule Divir Rebelski, he would say that it shouldn't be considered kidneys. The OU stance is, therefore, that everybody can ask their personal Rav on the topic, but they will not certify it. With regard to the next thing that the Rav mentioned about kidneys shenishtanu, it's correct that the OU in America does allow kidneys shenishtanu. Almost all the time that they do allow it, aside from being kidneys shenishtanu, it was bottled already in the product before Pesach. So it's another tziruf, it's another combination of kulos to say that it's more likely permissible. In Eretz Yisrael, we do not use kidneys shenishtanu. There is one exception of something which does not bear an OU on it, but is made from an OU syrup, which is the diet sodas that are coming out of the Coca-Cola company here in Eretz Yisrael, in Bnei Brak, and they have Rabbi Lau's Hashgacha. Those products are being made from OU syrups that do contain both aspartame and citric acid. Both the citric acid might not be from kidneys, and it might be from a white sugar that would be totally fine, but it might be from kidneys. And the aspartame is almost certainly from kidneys. And both of those, though, are bottled, even though, but however, the aspartame is there to give a good part of the tab. So it's a little bit more complicated to say that it's bottled. But there are various different tzirufim, why the OU in America is mekel on it. It comes here, is OU syrups. Anybody who does drink it in America and would feel, or like the Rav said, who needs it for dietary reasons, it's the same tzevet of mashgichim that work for Rabbi Landau that are taking responsibility for those products. So somebody who feels that that's a legitimate kula for them to use, or the Rav feels it's a legitimate kula for them to use, it's perfectly fine then to drink those soft drinks.
Let me, I need a further clarification. Let's go back to an old topic, matzah ashira, egg matzah. Why is there such a thing as the elderly or young children or infirm can eat something where the Ashkenazi community is noted not to? Who says you have to eat it? Why can't you eat potatoes and egg salad? Same question here. Who says you have to have diet soda? You could have seltzer. If you don't want sugared soda, drink seltzer. Or for 1 week, don't drink diet seltzer. I don't understand the idea that it's okay for someone who's on a diet, but someone who's not on a diet should avoid it. If he should avoid it, maybe the dieter should avoid it also.
The let's call the matzah shira, because that's easier. That's clear that's it says that for cholim and that it's mutter. The other thing is just our saying that since there's an argument and there's legitimate, you know, ways of being, and there's no hakra, right, one way or the other. So somebody who feels that they need it for a reason, that they can rely on the ones who say it's okay. Right? If we pass it's not okay or whatever, then it'd be a different story. But
matzah shira, you need it.
Yeah. Let me give you an example from another halach. Somebody whose lifestyle, he always bought a Cadillac, and he went broke, and he can't afford to buy a Cadillac. You're allowed to collect money for him and give him stalker to buy a Cadillac. Who said he's a Cadillac? Let him buy a Chevy. Right? But his lifestyle made it that that's what he needs. That's what he got used to. Right? I drink seltzer, but it took a while to get used to that. Right? So if somebody doesn't drink seltzer, and it'll hurt their simplest yontif, it'll hurt them aloud, their normal flow of life. Right? And the Torah gives credence to the lifestyle a person is used to be considered for that person a necessity. And it's not so easy just to tell somebody, change your entire lifestyle if the thing is mutter under situations where it's a necessity, health reasons or whatever. So it doesn't have to be a drug, and for little children or whatever, it's not easy to find things that kids like to eat. So if this is something that will make it easier to feed your children, so you can give them matzah shira, right? Because it's not really usher, it's just usher because of a chash, right? And therefore, makabel that it's a chumrah, right? In halacha, right? And therefore, since a chumrah in halacha, there are places to be lenient where there's necessity. Something's usher, right? Most circumstances doesn't become mutter because it's necessary. The exceptions to that too, the things that are shasat chak, or for what's it called, for hefsid maruba, that even things that are usher to one person are mutter for a different person. So the concept exists in halacha.
The Chumah that you quoted from Moshe, not to add on to the Kinyot, is that printed in Igos Moshe or is that Afiyat Shmur?
It's printed in Igos Moshe.
And then what's the meaning
of that? Moshe maintains that the Kinyot were what was around at the time, what they were misaking on at the time, and that we don't add on. One of the famous scenarios of something that people wanted to add on, which was probably around at the time also, was potatoes. This is a story of the Chayei Adam wanted to forbid potatoes. I don't remember exactly who it was, one of the other poskim in his generation, so he said, he wrote him a letter saying that if you're going to Aser potatoes, you're going to be Aser in Chayei Adam.
It's in one of the earlier tshuvas. Probably it's in an Orach Chaim Chelek Aleph, and it's about peanuts, specifically.
I noticed that Tnuva puts out two kinds of cottage cheese. The 5% fat content gets an Eda Haredes imprimatur on it. The 1%, which I prefer, does not. Only says kosher for Pesach. So what is the difference? What is one offering that the other is not offering?
Okay, I'll explain very simply. When you, both cottage cheeses theoretically can be made on the same standard. It's not that there's some hocus pocus that with 5% fat you can use the right starter, the right acid to create the process of the cheesing, whereas in the 1% you can't. But there's a price for every kosher ingredient. Companies will make a very simple seker, they'll make a very simple census of the market. They'll see how much of the quote unquote, let's say, Mahadran market are looking for 5%, how much are looking for 1%, etc. They'll see that most of the Mahadran market is happy with 5%. So they'll say, I'm not going to spend the extra money to buy an acid that's not from a kitnio space or maybe even from a chametz space, because like the Rav mentioned before about kitnio shenishtanu, there's also a shayla of chametz shenishtanu, and some of the lower grade hashkachos are even sovichan. So it becomes, there are issues with ones that do not have badax. Theoretically both could have, but it's just the company made their decision to give it to go on one, to spend the extra money to use the more expensive ingredients that will allow it to be the dots. And on the second product, I'll say, okay, you know, those who want lager, they won't have their 1% cottage cheese for a chag.
But is there something in the 1%?
There could be. There could be in the starters for the cheese process. You always need something to curdle. It could be a kidney's byproduct, and it could even be a chametz byproduct.
Even though it says kosher for Pesach.
There are acids. The way many of the acids go through a biochemical process that start off with a bug eating off of the
culture,
off of a culture, and very often the medium for the culture will be either a chametz sugar or a kidney's sugar.
Even though it says kosher for
right,
Pesach?
Because what it is it's what the acid is what they excreted. So we say that's kidneys or chametz shenishtanu. It's changed because it's not the chametz itself. It's not the wheat sugar that they were feeding off of to create the acid itself. It's the acid they created, and therefore there are those that are makom on such an acid, and they would say that you can use it to allow the curdling process of the cheese to start.
But generally, like when you look at sardines, it says a kosher for Pesach only for those who eat kidneys on Pesach. But and the cottage cheese does not say only for those.
Right,
who
because the Rabbanot won't necessarily view such acids as kidneys because it's kidneys and shana.
So a person is reading Makpi, they should not use the 1%, they should only use the 5%.
So anybody who generally eats only badatz or mahadrin ashkachos definitely should not eat cottage cheese that does not have a badatz or mahadrin ashkachos.
What about quinoa? What is the accepted consensus of quinoa for Pesach in Israel?
I think the Rav mentioned before that, especially in Eretz Yisrael, many of the rabbanim are more machmir and say that it's better not to use it on Pesach.
Thank you.
Even if you hold from those who do, you have to get it with a hechsher for Pesach, which I don't think even exists here.
And that also applies for 1% versus 3% milk. In other words, the 3% has the badatz, but the 1% does not.
There are differences between the bedats and ones that do not have any mahadrin hashkachos. Much of the difference between the bedats and the ones that don't have any mahadrin hashkacha has to do with Chol of Shabbos. A mahadrin.
Oh, I see.
No, not a mahadrin hashkacha, regular hashkacha. No. Much of it has to do with Chol of Shabbos, meaning milk that was milked on Shabbos, and there's no kashrus problem with milk that was milked on Shabbos. It's a problem that the Magen Avraham mentions in Hilchos Shabbos that we don't want to help those that are Mechal Shabbos benefit from Mechal Shabbos.
It has nothing to do with kashrus.
It's nothing to do with kashrus, but therefore we try not to buy those products. That's in plain milk. It should be Chol Yisrael. Again, there's a difference though also in the level of Chol Yisrael, the level of pikuach, the level of supervision that the badatz and the other mahadrin hashkachos, which in Tenuva is known as the badat mahadrin, have in terms of their pikuach on the milk, and that of regular, you know, they have revitmin alone, have in terms of their pikuach on the milk. So it's a little bit of a lesser level of Chol Yisrael, it's still Chol Yisrael. With regard to Pesach in particular, if it has another mahadrin hashkacha, again, it's pretty much, it's very, very similar, if not exactly the same thing, and it's okay. If it's not another mahadrin hashkacha, so it's always better not to have it, both because of the chashash and chol of Shabbos, which again has nothing to do with kashrus, so if you need it, and there's no other option, for whatever reason you're on a diet, and you have to be careful about not having higher percentages of fat, there's no isser in drinking fat in milk, which was milked in Shabbos by a Jew. After Shabbos. And then the same goes for Pesach, that as long as it was done before Pesach and you don't have to worry about whether maybe chametz accidentally fell in or something like that, it's going to be 100% okay to have it in terms of that over Pesach. If you're not makban on Chol Yisrael anyway, then it's definitely not an issue with drinking the milk. And if you are makban on Chol Yisrael, so there are definitely hidurim, which might be important hidurim, in the level of pikuach from the other mahadra hashgachos and milk and non-mahadra hashgachos.
I had heard that the minhagim are basically place rather than like general situations, and that with respect to kidneys, which was never a minhag in Eretz Israel, that could happen a time that maybe we won't have to be concerned about kidneys anymore.
You're right. It's a place where that minhag was never accepted. In that place is one thing. I don't know if that's the case in Eretz Israel. There are always throughout history were different types of Ashkenazim had their own kehilas, their Sfaradim had their kehilas, not only in relatively modern times, but throughout since Churban HaBayit. And therefore, it's like a place where Moshe Feinstein says that, like in New York, right, each kehila is its own place. You can't say that there's a minhag of America or a minhag of New York or whatever. Each kehila becomes its, and since there are legitimate kehilas here, the kehilas maintain the minhagim they had, right, because they came en masse, established a kehila, people gravitated to those kehilas, and the minhagim they had before, they maintain now too. So I don't know if there's any minhag Eretz Yisrael specifically in certain things, yes, but many things, kehilas developed in Eretz Yisrael and maintained their minhagim that they had from the places that they came.
As far as getting rid of food in their home, right? A lot of people go away. They just lock the door and they make a sale and then they go. So, but if you're actually going to be there, you know, you're going to close your cabinets or you're going to, you know, section off the whole section of the kitchen. Do you really have to get rid of everything that's, you know, like, suppose you have a lot of noodles or something, right? I mean, should you really, can you rely on the bodega and the sale for that stuff, or do you really have to get rid of all of that stuff?
Okay, Meir Hadin, Rabbi Krakowski, add or subtract. Meir Hadin, most poskim hold that you can rely on Mechiras Chametz. For various reasons, okay, it's not comparable to the big machlokas about the heter mechira by shmita. It's different thing. Mechametz, there are many, many reasons why, even though on the surface it seems to be what's called a harama, meaning that it's a legal sale or whatever, but you know that you're going to buy it back from the goy or whatever, but the process is a 100% legal process, and the sale is a sale. And in situations where, for whatever reason, legally the sale is not a sale, and the person never meant to sell anything, whatever, there are problems. It could be that there is no sale. But somebody who wants to sell his chametz, not going to use the chametz over Pesach, it's a legitimate legal sale, and the way that it's sold, and you can rely on that even for real chametz, even for bread. There are those that are, because the sale is basically haramah, right? And the Vilagon like that also, not to sell actual chametz, only to sell chametz that's in a mixture or whatever, but not real chametz, okay? That the problem of the sale is not to do with eating. It has to do more with the balura balimotze, not a lot of own chametz. So those things that the owning of the chametz is less of a problem, because they're mixtures or whatever, they do sell. But the things that are real chametz, noodles and bread or whatever, they don't sell. That's a chumra, it's a hiddur. Somebody who doesn't sell real chametz. But for the most part, most poskim hold that the sale of even real chametz is fine. And if you sell it the proper way through somebody who knows what they're doing, Right, and they make sure they're selling it to a goy and not to a Jew who thinks he's a goy, or whatever, which has happened here in Eretz Israel. Then what's it called? You can rely on that, put away the chametz in some place where it's not accessible, so you don't come to, by mistake, eat it or whatever. And the sale is a bona fide sale, and it's 100%. Mm-hmm.
So the nullification as well, I mean, that can certainly be relied upon, you know, when you're...
Right. Really, the chametz from the Torah, just getting up Erev Pesach and saying all the chametz I have should be considered like dust of the earth and odorless is good enough. The rabbis added to that, that if that's all you do, we're afraid that you may find chametz and either regret what you said or end up eating it. So they said you have to get it out of the house. But getting out of the house doesn't necessarily mean that you have to burn it, destroy it. Right? It means that if you sell it to a goy and it's in his house, basically, even though it's in your house, but you've rented those areas where the chametz is to the goy, so basically in the goy's house, and there's enough of a distinction that you're not going to come to eat it because it's separated from you, that's also okay.
For this week, can chametz and kosher Pesach products that you're buying coexist in the same freezer if each is wrapped multiple times?
Even if they're not wrapped multiple times, but if they're wrapped in such a way that they can't be a mixture, then yeah, you can put anything together like that if they're completely wrapped. But if they're not completely wrapped and you come in contact with each other, then you have a problem. You should ask on each thing how serious the problem is. But if they're all in containers, wrapped completely, there's no reason why you can't keep them in the same freezer.
And also,
now, not next week, yeah.
This week. Is there a mayonnaise, kosher Pesach, that's not with kidneys? I haven't found one yet.
There's, from what I understand, Geffen mayonnaise, I think it has no UP, that has cottonseed oil. Cottonseed oil in America was the oil for Pesach for everybody. Every Hashgacha uses it as the Mahadrin oil. Even the Hasidic, what's it called, Hashgachas there, use cottonseed oil. Here in Eretz Israel, there is no minig Eretz Israel, to the best of my knowledge, that says that in Eretz Yisrael, cottonseed oil is kidneys. There are different poskim, different things. So you can maintain your minig that you had in America here, right, and use cottonseed oil, except you should be aware that there are Israelis who don't use it, and if you're inviting them to your house, you may have problems if you use cottonseed oil. So you should be sensitive to who you're inviting on Pesach, because there are opinions here that say cottonseed oil is kidneys, but Geffen mayonnaise is made with cottonseed oil, and if you don't hold the cottonseed oil is kidneys, you can use it 100%, and it's available all over.
I would rather avoid it. Is there one that doesn't?
You'd rather avoid cottonseed oil?
Yeah.
Is there one that doesn't use cottonseed oil? To the best of my knowledge, not, but I've seen a lot of recipes
that make
your own
mayonnaise. I don't have a machine.
I think somebody did tell me that there's one with Rabbi Rubin's Ashkacha this year, but I can't tell you where they're selling it and where you can buy it.
What about canola oil? Is that good news?
That's also a big argument. Right, some say that canola oil is rapeseed oil. I don't know exactly what that is anyway, but they say that those who say that it's okay say that it's a new product, just like what Moshe Feinstein said, and didn't exist before. Others say it's not true. It's mentioned in Tshuvas, earlier Tshuvas already, and it did exist before. It's not a totally new product. And it has a lot of the conditions that would make it kidneys. So I don't know 100%, but from the postkin that I follow, canola is the same thing as we consider kidneys.
Canola oil is different from rapeseed oil because the rapeseed is processed
or genetically whatever, and that could fall into that other category that you mentioned before.
I'll just mention, as official EU policy, that both rapeseed oil and the regular canola oils are viewed by both of the OU's post-skim as kidneys, and it's established OU policy. It's mentioned in the OU Pesach guides that it should be viewed as kidneys. So again, everybody can ask their own row. We always encourage that, but the official OU policy is that it's kidneys.
Is olive oil acceptable or not?
I think olive oil is one of the things that almost every community uses as a staple for Pesach.
It's what?
It's been used as the main oil for Pesach, I think.
Right, you just have to make sure it has a kasher for Pesach, because a lot of olive oils are not pure olive oil. And the processing also could be a problem. So you should have a good kasher for Pesach. You're sure you're not kidneys.
And the OU maintains that all their olive oils that have OU for year-round are pure, that we know, and that the mamel they can be used for Pesach. It's always preferable when you can buy something with a Pesach Hashkafa to buy it with a Pesach Hashkafa.
But I saw sardines in olive oil, and it has a kosher Pesach label on it. It doesn't say anything about kidneys or anything else.
No. So olive oil is not kidneys.
Pardon?
It's not
olive
kidneys.
Olive oil is not kidneys, for sure.
What about Nutella oil? Nut oil?
There's nut, I mean, there are nut oils that are walnut oil and what's it called that they use here? Palm oil.
Mm-hmm.
How healthy they are, I don't know, but they are kosher to Pesach. I guess for a week you're not going to,
So they would not. They would not be kidneys, though.
But nut oils, no. But again, you have to know that they're processed kosher to Pesach, because oils go through what's it called, processing. That, unless they're kosher for Pesach, could be that they're not oil, but the processing is in areas that the incumbent oils or whatever, the other things that they process.
What does one have to do with Dikat's comments? If you have, I come from London, so I have a house in London, I have a place here, and you might be, other people have homes in other places, and they're staying in a hotel, where do you have to, what's the name? Not for checking, just for the breakfast.
Okay, where you're not going to be on Pesach at all, you can just close up, sell the chametz. If you have the minyan to sell real chametz, and you don't do anything there. In the places where you're going to be, and even if you're not going to be there the whole Pesach, but you're going to come back, then you should make bedikas chametz either at the proper time the night before Pesach with a bracha, or if that's difficult, and you're not going to be in those places until the middle of Pesach or whatever, then you can make the bedikah before you leave those places the night before, same way that you would do it if it was Erev Pesach, without a bracha. And that's sufficient, and that's pretty much it. Usually, you can make somebody your agent. You're not selling the chametz to the rabbi. He also can't have chametz on Pesach. What you're doing is appointing him as your agent to sell your chametz for you. Okay. In order that the agency should be strong, usually you sign on a document. Right, that says that you are appointing the rabbi to be your agent, and then the rabbi sells the chametz for all the people who are on that thing. However, even if you didn't sign your name on the document, usually when you sign your name on the document, you also make a kinyan sudor, to show that you really have intent to make this shulchus. All of that is preferable, but if for some reason you can't get there to actually sign your name, or you can't make the kinyan, you can appoint the rabbi over the phone, and that's also acceptable. Because you're not selling your chametz at that time, you're just appointing an agent to sell it for you, and the agency you can do verbally I preferably there should be something that makes it more shows more intent, but even verbally is fine. When we sell the chametz, in fact, we even say that we're selling it for people who maybe forgot and they're going to come later, right? And we understand that they would, if they would remember, they would want to sell their chametz, so you can become an agent for somebody to do something good for them, right? Even without their knowledge. But that's for sure not preferable in doing.
Let's say you feel you don't have any chametz left in your house. Should you do a mechira just in case?
Because you never know what you may have, and the shtar mechira says even chametz that you're not aware of or whatever is sold, just an extra added precaution that, and if you have nothing, so you didn't sell anything.
Forgive me, I came back 5 minutes late, so I may have missed this, so if I'm missing the person, I apologize. Coming to live in Israel before Pesach is a very, very difficult going into the stores. It's like a shock treatment. Having been from your whole life, and all of a sudden you think you know how to do things, and suddenly you lost in the stores. Is there a store, maybe I'm dreaming, but is there a store that perhaps has things without kidneys go into and assume that you don't have this problem? Everyone I've spoken to who's made Aliyah within the past 5 years has funny stories to tell about how they bought things and accidentally found out it was wrong and had to bring it back. One extreme case I heard of, which was really horrifying, was a woman went shopping, had a whole house completely passed up to it, went and put everything in place, started cooking, and a friend walked in and said, your house is completely trashed. She had to literally start from beginning and cleaning and kashering and buying everything new because she bought a whole bunch of kidneys without realizing. So, what my question really is, maybe it's going to be a suggestion for next year. If there's some way that perhaps the OAU can help us ladies who are really not, you know, the idea of, I'm listening to this, it is so complicated and very frankly and so deep. And you have to be so intelligent and so knowledgeable to just go in and buy an oil. You know, is there a way that you can just go in easy, pick up a bottle that says OUP, no kidneys, and come on, you know, and just be so made in a very simple way? Because very frankly, there's the, you know, the whole Gemara, you know, back and forth, and Hillel and Shammai, and, you know, Rabbanim argued for years, and it's wonderful, in the Beis Medrash. But to the woman who has to go into the store and make a cake and doesn't know really what to buy or not to buy. And everybody, I mean, I'm sure all the ladies here agree with me because it's very complicated, very difficult, and very demoralizing. And suddenly, I know certain people literally go away for Pesach this year. Friends of mine, and they said, I can't deal with it, I'm just going away. I can't go to the supermarket.
Can you say something before Rebecca Krakowski answers it?
Well,
don't feel bad because now in America, there are a few hashgachas that give also now for kidneys also. I think the OU started and the Star K. And so they have the same problem in America, so don't feel bad that you're here.
Well, she came here and she's taking her whole family to
her. Okay, let me answer like this. First of all, if you know anybody who accidentally used kidneys in the kitchen, they probably do not have to kasher. They should call their rabbi before they take any such drastic measures. That's Aleph. Beis, I want to say like this. It's very hard in neighborhoods that are not very homogenous to say that you're going to have such a supermarket. I don't know that it would be right necessarily to do that either, because why should we rely on the Sephardi community that does eat kidneys? You know, they shouldn't be denied food that they think is perfectly kosher for them, and perhaps, you know, there's certain svarim that a seder without rice at Shulchan Aruch just isn't a seder. But
my suggestion is that there could be some kind of supervision. But I could pick up a bottle, okay. Very simple.
So, let me continue with the answer. If you stick, I'm not getting into year-round kashrus, into my suggestions for year-round kashrus. That's for a different shalos and tshuvas, you know, different question-answer session. But if for Pesach, you stick to the Ashkenazi Mahadrin Hashkachos, you only buy things that have an Ashkenazi Bedatz on it, or an OU. The OU, we did certify, like the Rav mentioned, we started certifying in America Kitneos products, but we do not say on the Kitneos, it doesn't say OUP, it doesn't say anything like that, it's very clearly OU Kitneos. There's no way to get confused, it's very, very clear. Nonetheless, if here you stick to just the Ashkenazi Bedatz Hashkachos, Eda Charedis, Rabbi Rubin, Bells, the, you know, even for this sake, even the various Chassam Sofers, which are Ashkenazi Hashkachos, so they will not give up Kitneos products, or the OU and the OK, the Hashkachos that you're familiar with, those Hashkachos will not give on Kitneos, at least not in the regular scenario. And if they would, it would be extremely, extremely clear that it's Kitneos. So then you're much better off. That would be my first suggestion. My second suggestion is if you still find it confusing or you find it hard to shop in supermarkets in certain neighborhoods where they have a lot of Kitneos products, very often if you go to the more heavily, more Haredi populated neighborhoods where they have, where it's mostly, especially if it's mostly Ashkenazi, you're going to find, you know, I would suggest maybe one of the supermarkets on the Sirotskin or something like that. You'll also, I live in Rechavia, and I know that by me it's a jungle in the supermarket because it's not a homogenous community, and you have people from all different walks of life, and they have everything with all sorts of rabbanuyot and all sorts of foreign hashkachos that have with all sorts of different levels of standards. And it's very confusing. But if you go to one of these neighborhoods, like Suratskin to Achi Kedai or something like that there, most of the products will be Eda Charedis or Beirubin or something like that, and they will be fine for everybody. They have no Kitneos in them. That's the best suggestions I can give.
I was confused by symbols and which symbols are, you know, correct. And I know that you said Ashkenazi, but like, what do the symbols actually look like? And is there a place I can look that up?
You can look, there are various websites online that have it. I can suggest to you, I think the Jerusalem Kosher News has a key for all the Ashkachot. You can find them in some of the phone books, especially some of the Newcomer's Guide, Seminary Guide, all sorts of user-friendly Anglo-Saxon types of phone books, Madrich Haredi, various phone books like that have lists of the Kashriyot and what their symbols look like.
Just my observation over the years. Years ago, there were a lot of products that did not say Lolo Chashash Kitniot, nor did they say L'Ochle Kitniot Bilvad. There were a lot of kosher for Pesach, and you had to go figure it out for yourself. That's changed. Now you find just about every product either says L'lo chashash kitniot or L'ochle kitniot bilvad. And I find that that should not confuse the women that you were referring to, because it's clearly labeled that way. And a company that doesn't label it that way, we should not use. Kosher Pesach doesn't say enough.
Right. The one area where I'll explain to you why very often people will err is, like, this is actually a conversation we've had before about the Hamon Am versus people who are maybe a little bit more familiar. L'lo chashash kitnios and l'ochle kitnios, to many people who aren't very fluent with reading Hebrew, especially if it's somewhat small print sometimes, they can sometimes get confused, especially when it's, if it's dealing with, let's say, some of the Sephardi Ashkachot. You can have Bedat Beit Yosef in their little box for Pesach, let's say on the bottom of it, L'ochle Kitniot Bovad, or they can say L'ochashash Kitniot, and they can look very similar, and sometimes people will err. So I do understand confusion in that area. That's why I said if you stick to the Ashkachos that will never certify Kitniot, or that will only certify Kitniot with a very precise symbol, it's usually going to be a little bit easier.
If you think that's bad, there's also kemach matzot and kemach limatzot. Kemach limatzot is raw flour that is used to bake matzah. And it's in a lot of the cookies that are matzah ashira. Kemach matzot is what we used to call matzah meal or cake meal. Totally, totally different.
You have to read, you're right.
So that's why, like I mentioned, it's always best to, if you're Ashkenazi, you stick to, again, about all year round kashrus, and the OU does not take a stance in terms of commenting on other kashriyot. This is just a suggestion so as not to complicate matters and to simplify and make it less confusing. To stick on Pesach, you're Ashkenazim, and you have Ashkenazi minhagim, you stick to Ashkenazi Ashkachot, especially the higher level Ashkenazi Ashkachot, and you should be pretty safe from these types of issues.
Except for another warning. Badat Eide Haredi Hashkacha remains on the label of products that they don't supervise for Pesach, that someone else does. So you can pick up a product that says
or like you pointed out the OU in some situations.
Kosher Pesach in the square with some rav that you don't know, and then you see a badatz, and you say, oh, that's fine. Except in small print, it says, for the rest of the year, not for Pesach.
Right, so again, it's every, a consumer does have to use a little bit of intuition and be a little bit careful in shopping. And you should always make sure that the kosher for Passover symbol or writing, kasher lePesach writing, should be in very close proximity. You know, it's juxtapositioned right next to, either right on top, right underneath, the Ashkacha that you are relying upon for Pesach. If it's not, and you think that it might be, Baruch Hashem, nowadays, almost all the Kashriyot have phone numbers and emails and various different ways to contact them, and it's always best to double check by contacting the Kashrut, or at least by asking your Rav.
In terms of depending on the supermarkets, you know, doing what's proper, I had an experience last year that I found pretty shocking. I was shopping with my daughter who had gone to Mechala, and she was the expert. She was in charge of checking the reading labels because her eyes were better. And we found something with an OUP ice cream. It was, you know, fine kosher paper. And she was fine, was very happy, found it. And I remember I picked up the chocolate and I looked at it. I said, Tippy, check it. She checked it. It's fine, very happy. And put it into the thing, and then I found the strawberry. So I picked up the strawberry one, which was right next to it. It was all actually thrown into one bin. And I looked at it and I said, that's funny. Where do you see kosher Pesach on this? And she said, I don't know. And then I said, you sure? And we both looked at it. We looked at it a long time. The point was, that they had the chocolate kosher for Pesach, but the OU wanted it with the strawberry, which was actually chumitz, in the same place. And not everybody's going to particularly spend that long looking. You know, if you see chocolate and strawberry in the same mix, it changes later. Not everybody's going to change. So it was a bit.
Matt, I hear your question, and I'll answer very briefly like this. Over the years, the various kashriyot, as I'm sure you remember even better than me, because when I was a kid, there was already a lot of stuff kashrut lePesach. And my mother would always tell us that the only thing that was kashrut lePesach when she was a child was, aside from matzah itself, was if you ate gebrach, so they had chocolate covered matzos. When I was a child, it was already very different. We already had bazooka bubble gum and a few other candy products. We had little the fruit slices and jelly fruit slices and some other not very appetizing candies. And things like that. But over the years, every year, there's more and more, from more and more kashriyot, from the better and better kashriyot, every single year. The kashrus agencies are answering to the consumer's request to have more and more products, kashrut lePesach. It's very hard for us at the same time to start to tell a company, well, either you're going to have all your products kosher for Passover, or we're not going to certify any product, because the consumers don't want that. The consumers want if the chocolate flavor can be kosher lePesach, so at least the chocolate flavor can be kosher lePesach. And at the same time, it's very hard to have them change. No company is going to be masking to change the whole wrapping. I should tell you a very brief story. I have a friend who did the Hakshara on the Pepsi factory in America. And the CEO of the company came in the middle of the Hakshara. He said, when you finish the Hakshara, come into my office, we'll make a toast to Passover. So they finished off, he came into his office, he offered him a cup of scotch, you know, shot of scotch. And after he made their, you know, their little l'chaim there, he says, so tell me, Rabbi, how many months long is Passover? So the rabbi tells him, months, it's 8 days. This is in Chutz Laaretz at least. The guy chokes on his toast. He says, what? This is, you guys can't live 1 week without having Pepsi? So this friend of mine happens to be a pulpit rabbi, and he used it as a musa shmuz for his tzibur, and I told him that he actually missed the boat. But the reason why Pepsi does it isn't because we can't live the week without Pepsi, but it's because they can't live the week when Coca-Cola did decide to make a hachshara and they didn't. Especially with so much family time. But the point is that if we come to the company with too many things and they have to change the entire wrapping, and it becomes, you know, that they would have to have a totally different looking bottle or something like that, you know, a different shape, a different color, a different thing, it becomes very, very cumbersome for the company. Sometimes they can't do it because of various unified standards that they have to have in all their bottles or different things like that in terms of interior policies in the company. Therefore, we have to make a choice of either that we're going to certify the products, even though consumers have to exercise some caution to double check. And that's basically become the preferred decision, especially by the consumers over the years. So I wish there'd be something better to tell you. We don't have any shlita over the stores. If I had a store that I was certifying, obviously I wouldn't let them have the kashrut Pesach or non-kashrut Pesach in the same refrigerator, never mind the same bin. But I don't certify the stores. We don't certify the supermarkets. So I can't come to the supermarket with such a demand. But one of the things that we have seen over time is that the consumer's influence can have a tremendous impact on all sorts of different components of the commercial chain. And therefore, I would suggest to complain to the supermarkets that you shop in that it's very confusing that they have the products in close proximity one to another, and they'll start. The more people complain about these things, the more the supermarkets will already start paying attention and separating the kosher for Pesach from the non-kosher for Pesach in a more precise fashion.
Most do.
But it's like the more you complain, if you see it, complain.
When I came to Eretz Yisrael 30 years ago, there was no kosher for Pesach Mahadran soda. Nothing. The Das gave out salsa, and that was it. And no one gave. And then Rabbi Rubin, 1 year, gave on Schweppes and RC, and the next year, all of a sudden, all the hashgachas started giving us salted too. So it depends on they see that the consumers want it, then they'll give it. It's not sometimes, it's not because they can't give it, it's just because they didn't think there was a desire for it.
What is the story about eggs?
We're only going to take a few more questions. Bill has to leave soon. So I think there was someone over there first, and then one of you.
One of those
badats
in the Haredes and says not to Pesach with another Hashgacha there, does that imply that the
badats
thinks it's no good, or they just didn't deal with it?
Okay, so I'm just going to answer very quickly. We mentioned that earlier on tonight. That depending, if there's a reason why you'd be worried that maybe there's a real problem with the product, so that it's always best to check with the one who does approve it or with the Eidah Haredes why they do or don't approve it. But in many situations, the Eidah Haredes has all sorts of extra minhagim. They don't any spice that there's a minhag of any kehilonati, the Eidah doesn't give on the product that includes that spice. They won't certify anything as onion powder or garlic powder. So for many people, it's not an issue, and you wouldn't certify that product, and it has nothing to do with the Eidah. The Eidah doesn't maintain it's a real Pesach problem. They just won't certify such a product. Or like I mentioned earlier, products that have more than five ingredients to make up the product. It used to be the Eidah starting to change a little bit, and they're redefining exactly what kind of five ingredients and different things like that, but there might be reasons that have nothing to do with the precise kashrus of the product. And if you trust the other hashgacha fully, then you can usually rely upon it. If there's any reason to be worried, ask them about it.
It's So that implies that they did look at it and purposely did not certify.
The Eidei Chareiros does know what's in there, they purposely did not certify, but it might not be for real legitimate kashrus.
But sometimes it's a kidney yolk issue. Right. In other words, the Eidei Chareiros emblem is still there.
Maybe they just didn't want to bother, you know, with this product. But
that too.
They might. No. But they know what's in it, and they decided they didn't want to bother with it for whatever reason.
Two more questions. That's it. Yep.
Can you use eggs with a red print on it or not?
When people ask me this question, I generally say that the print is not an issue. If you're concerned with it, so either be careful to crack the egg on the other side or rinse off the writing on it.
I saw an advertisement for eggs without it. So
right.
Then it triggered something like, is there something wrong with it if it
doesn't? Nowadays, there really isn't the crowd. There isn't really much to be worried about, especially if you bought your eggs before Pesach.
So,
she just wanted to ask.
I'm wondering, for the Vinika's comments, do you have to check every door and cupboard?
Check what?
You have to check inside drawers and cupboards, or just there?
If you never brought chametz into those drawers,
around.
What? And you don't have little children who bring chametz everywhere, right? Then you don't have to check places that you don't bring chametz into. That reasonably chametz wasn't in the drawers. If you go to those drawers eating your sandwich, you may have dropped pieces of sandwich into the drawer or whatever. There's those kind of drawers and place where you normally eat when you go into those drawers, and you have to check.
Last question.
So, some people have a minhag to buy all of their supplies before Pesach actually starts. So is there any sort of...
Yeah, there is rhyme and reason to that. Chametz before Pesach has most of the laws of Bittul that apply to other Isurim, since before Pesach it's something that's mutter. On Pesach, chametz, in some instances, isn't bottled even a thousand, a million, whatever. So if you buy everything before Pesach, and even if something by accident got dropped in there or whatever, then under most circumstances it's bottled and there's no problem. If you, on the other hand, the truth is it's not really dependent on when you buy it. Right? You can't possibly buy something most of the time on Pesach that was not made before Pesach. Okay, it's not impossible. According to many opinions, it goes on the time when it was made, and then it's bottled. There is an opinion that goes when you buy it and it becomes a question then to you. So therefore, there is something into buying things before Pesach, special things. In America, there used to be things that were clear. I don't know if that still applies because the food industry is very much different than it was even 30 years ago. Okay. Today, there's so many additives, so many things you can't even know if it's water, doesn't have any problems with it. I remember years ago, somebody asked me to give them a hechsher on bottled water for Pesach. And after looking into it, what they did is they filtered the water through charcoal. That was the only ingredient. There was no ingredients. It was just... And I told them, look, I'm not going to give you a hechsher on water. It's absurd. I'll give you a letter that says you don't need a hechsher on water for Pesach. Don't give you a hechsher. It sounds like, misleading. And then the next year, that water had a live hechsher on it. And they probably paid for it too. But the truth is that as things develop, you can't be sure of anything. That there aren't processing problems or additive problems or whatever. So many, it used to be that there are many products, even today, like Rabbi Krusty said, that olive oil is a regular hechsher for the year. It's okay for Pesach too, because the way that it's processed, there's no real problems with it. And the chances that one of the workers, was eating a sandwich over the processed olive oil is so way out, right, that in case it happened, so if you got all the olive oil before Pesach, so even if that happened, the worst could be that it's bottled. If that same olive oil was produced on Pesach, or you bought it on Pesach, according to some opinions, then it's not bottled even a million times, so it's a problem.
This means that buying it, when you buy it, it's
what?
The Rav mentioned the opinion that
that the suffix is judged upon when it becomes a suffix to you, not when it was actually made. It was made, nobody had any doubts. Because nobody didn't make any difference. It became a doubt when you bought it, right? And now it was owned by a Jew. Now the Shaila came up. Since the Shaila came up, now you have to decide.
Who's the name of that?
I don't remember to tell you the truth. It's not pashtus, it goes when it's made.
Thank you, Rabbi Leff. Thank you, Rabbi Krakowski. Thank you, audience, for coming. And everyone should have a Chag Kasher, but also Sameach.
Amen. Amen.